Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yerdana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bava Kamma, daf Vav, page 6. So our daf is still talking about our Mishnah and parsing it out. The citation today at the top of the daf is Hatzad Hashavesha Bahen, meaning what is the common denominator between all four of the really avot nezikin, right, that are mentioned in the Mishnah. And of course the question is, once we have those four, what do we learn from them to understand that that's the common denominator that we need to take with us as we go into other areas of damage and so on. So the Gemara asks, li tuyei mai, to include what? Meaning, what other categories could be included with shor bor maven hever? Amar Abaye, li tuyei avno sakino masa'o. So the Gemara says we're going to add, or rather Abaye says we're going to include here the stone, the knife, and like a load, a burden that a person might be carrying. Each of them, has a specific owner, and that owner would be obligated in the case of damage. But in what's the case? Shenichan barosh gago, he puts any one of these three items on the top of his roof. V'naflu baruach mitzuyah, and they fall in a wind that is the amount of wind blowing, miles per hour type of thing, that is to be expected. Meaning it's not a hurricane conditions that were not expected. It's just a regular wind that, you would think might be an issue up for the roof. And v'hiziko, and they are damaged. They damage something else, right? Meaning these things are put on the roof, they fall in the ruach mitzuyah, and then they cause damage. So the tricky part here is, I would say to begin with, this is already a very specific case to get to the details to say, well, this is what the common denominator teaches us. It's a very narrow field. The Gemara goes on to ask about this. Hey, Chidami, what happens, under what circumstances would a person be liable for the damage that is caused under these conditions? Maski, if you say that they do damage as they're moving, like in the movement of it, they cause damage, then don't you already have covered in the category of Aish? Aish meaning that which damages and it moves. It's not alive, but it moves. Maishna Aish, the Koach Acher Muravbo, the same way that Aish has another force, another power, right? Meaning something is moving it. Shmerta, and the same way that the property, the anything that you have that's going to cause fire is on you to be protective, to make sure that you're not negligent with regard to it. Haninami, so to hear, koach acher murav behen. In this case, your rock, your stone, your rock, and your knife, and your burden, your package, whatever, all of them have another force or power that's going to get itself involved, namely the wind that blows it off the roof. And likewise, you're supposed to make sure that you're not negligent here, meaning it's a ruach mitzuyah, it's a wind that you could expect to find. It means that you already are obligated to make sure that you protect against it. So let's say, no, it's not the same thing of causing damage at the time that it is moving. Rather, understand that it's causing damage in its coming to rest as it comes to land. So the Gemara says, no, but in that case, once you've got something that's causing damage in its stillness, right, in its placement in the road, let's say, right, that's the case of Bor, that's the pit. Whether you define it according to Rav or according to Shmuel, which we didn't delve into so much, but either way, it doesn't matter. You don't need Avinu Sakinu Masa'o. You don't need to say, we infer this from Hatzad HaShavesha Behen, from the Mishnah's statement that there's a common denominator. What else can we learn from it? We've already got it covered in Bor. So then we're going to try to understand this Mishnah Bor, Shekein Tchilat Asiyato LeNezek U'Mamon Choshmer. So the same way that we say that a pit was designed, the very essence of digging a pit is that it's going to cause damage. And also you need to be protective against it to prevent someone from hurting themselves or property. Haninami, so to hear, in this case meaning the stuff on the roof that could fall and then in its landing cause damage, tchilat asiyatan lenezek, in the very essence of there being, They're made to cause damage. And likewise, you have to protect against negligence. Ella de lo afkarino. So the Gemara says, all right, so it's not going to teach when it's doing damage in its movement, and it's not going to be, you know, doing damage in its landing. But what about in a case, right, where you didn't lo afkarino, you didn't declare your objects ownerless, you didn't make them hefker to the extent that they have no owner. So then now perhaps that's what the tzad hashavesha behen, the phenomenon of a common denominator, will come to teach those things that are not made hefker, that are not declared ownerless. The Shmuel da amar kula mi boro lamanu. Shmuel says you can learn all of those cases about obstacles that are in a public domain. You learn it from boor. Hainu boor. So you just have boor, meaning, you again, you don't need to learn it out from atzad hashavesha behen. The Gemara says, li'olam dafkarinu. No, really, we're talking about the liability where you do say that these items are not mine. They are ownerless. I'm declaring them hefker. Velo dama labor. And that is actually not like the category of bor, of pit. Ma labor. Shekein ein koach acher muravbo. What do we know about bor? There's no other damaging force that is involved in the damage that a pit can cause. There's no movement, there's no wind, there's no fire, etc. Tomar bahani shekoach acher murav ben. So if you're going to say that the pit has no force involved, are you going to say that, what about these cases, these three, where you do have another force involved, meaning because there's a wind? And so whether you say it's causing damage on its way down, or you say it's causing damage in its landing, it's still not a case of bore. It can't be. So the Gemara says, Eish tochiach. No, we're going to look at fire. The fire can prove that really when you do have another force within, because fire moves in that same way, so then perhaps you could then say that these cases could be derived from fire. But again, once you say it's from fire, then you don't have to worry about deriving it from the very phenomenon of a common denominator. Now the Gemara is going to ask some questions about fire. So what about fire? Its essence is that it moves, and in the moving, it causes damage. So then the Gemara says, well, then the pit, the case of a pit, will prove that not having that characteristic, namely that it would move and in its movement do the damage, right? So then that's not what we're talking about. The logic will bring us back to the very beginning. We're not actually going to, you know, parse that all through. But the Gemara is very sharp in what it's saying here in trying to figure out what extra is learned by the words of the Mishnah that take us beyond the four cases, which are supposed to include, you know, basically everything, except for lo and behold, maybe they don't. So the Gemara keeps going in the same kind of vein to say, you know, what makes each of them unique? What makes the boor, right? That tchilat asiyato lenezek, right? Fire, darkole lechul azik, right? And so we're going to go through, the Gemara itself goes through each one of these, and it comes back eventually to shur, to the ox, to say, what's the thing about, what about the ox? Shekein darkole lechul azik. It's also going to be something that moves, and in its movement is going to cause damage. So then you're going to say, well, boor, the pit, is the opposite of that. You end up with all of these different cases that still are not quite sufficient to mean that you don't, let me say this right, that it looks like each of the cases, the four cases, are sufficient to cover anything we need. And so then the Gemara is really trying to say, one second, but these examples, this case of the Avenos HaKeno Masa'o, they're on the roof and they fall with a commonly found wind and they cause damage, where is that going to fit? They keep trying to fit it into the other categories, not quite succeeding. And, you know, in the end, this is where we end up saying that we learn it from Atzad HaShaveh, meaning the Gemara has given us the end game before we even get started. I'm not going to read it all inside in the interest of time, but you can literally trace it through as the Gemara goes through each one of the different cases. Okay, I do want to just note that there's a really interesting, like, a piece of realia of, you know, back in the day, what the sages did towards the end of Amud Aleph, where they're talking about how they would open their gutters to drain the sewage from the houses, and they would flush those water, right, the icky water, into the public domain, And then what would happen if they didn't have permission to do it, and what damage might that cause? Whereas in the rain, in a summer season rather, because it's smelly and it's gonna be icky. But in the rainy season, then they're allowed to do it because the rain itself will wash all the ick away. So it's a sidebar in the context of all of this. You don't need that realia to follow the logic through, but I just kind of think it's interesting, and also a really sharp illustration of the difference between the winter and the summer, rainy and dry seasons, which, is not the case all over the world, but it was the case in Bavel.
Well, I think it's one of those things that it makes us a little bit not realize, we read about it. Sometimes you'll see it in a historical novel or something like that. Like the ancient world was smelly. You know what I mean? Like it didn't
Yeah.
have the convenience of plumbing. It didn't smell good, I think.
And I think a lot of the things you might read kind of, gloss over that, because who really wants to pay attention to it?
Right. Well,
But
we
they
live
might
in
have
very
to.
sanitized, between showering frequently, deodorant, like it's, I mean, there's a lot to say about that. We're very sanitized with smell. But to get back to the Gemara itself, I do think it's interesting that the Gemara sort of entertains here four different, sort of cases that they can come up with about the commonality. Like they really want to explore this idea of what they actually have in common and try to find something sort of universal to tie everything together. I'm going to move on to Amud Bet, and I want to read two small sections here. The first is just more of a interesting, when the Gemara sort of comments on something stylistic about the Mishnah, and it quotes a part of the Mishnah that says "Kishehizik chav hamazik," right? When any of these damagers are done, does damage, the owner of the damager is chav, right? Which would mean they're obligated; they have to, pay whatever they need to pay. Because they cause damage. And so the Gemara says, Chav Hamazik, right? Why does it teach the damager is Chav? Mevayelei. The word in the Mishnah should have been Chayav, right? We never use the term Chav. We say, you're Chayav. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Ha Tana Yerushalmi, who? The Tana was a Yerushalmi. The Tani Lishna Kalila, whose teachings were given in, this literally means, like some type of clipped language. And so what the idea here is that the Mishnah here was taught by some Tana from Yerushalayim, where it seems to be that they sometimes would like drop the last syllable of the word. So I think that's kind of interesting. And apparently, if you look at this a little bit, this kind of style is much more apparent in the Talmud Yerushalmi. You could see that. So I think that's like interesting that sort of the Bavli Gemara comes to make that comment. That was the first thing that I wanted to read. Okay, then we'll get on to the next part. And the Gemara here is quoting the part of the Mishnah that says, "Lishalim teshlu mei nezek," right? That the damager has to make payment for the damage from the choicest of land, right? That's what they pay from. So the Gemara is going to bring the Braisa here that gives actually a machlokas about this idea of what is the definition of Metev Sadehu, right? The best of the land. Tanu Rabbanan, right? It's taught in a Braisa, Metev Sadehu, Metev Karmo Yishalem. So the Torah teaches, right, that if an animal causes damage by eating or trampling somebody's produce, the owner of the animal, and this it's a quote from the Pasuk in Shmot chapter 22, verse 4. And again, that's the same Pasuk that we used that was quoted earlier as the source for Shein and Regel, right? That it needs to be paid by the choices of his fields or the choices of his vineyard. And so the idea is the his, right, is understood as as being the damaged party. And so what the Pasuk is basically saying is that the animal's owner has to pay the equivalent of Metev sadehu shel nizak, umetev karmo shel nizak. The damager, meaning the owner of this animal that caused the damage, has to pay the damaged party's choicest field or the damaged party's choicest vineyard. In other words, if an animal destroys somebody's yard, field, right, or vineyard, we know that some fields are worth more money than other fields. Some vineyards are worth more money than other vineyards. And it could be that even within one person, right, he has, one field that's worth a lot of money and one field that's not worth as much money. When they assess the damages, it's going to be assessed against the best of his fields, right? That's the first opinion here of the Mishnah. And that is the opinion of the Braisa, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, remember, we always know that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael tend to disagree, particularly around the interpretation of Psukim when it comes to halakha. Right? The Pasuk only comes to basically tell us that the court collects damages from the damager's good land. The Kal Vachomer Lehegdage. And certainly that's true when the court collects for the temple treasury. So in other words, the Gemara is going to explain this a little bit more. But the idea of the Machlokas is that when we talk about Metev Sadehu, right, the choices of his land, the question is, whose land are we talking about in this Pasuk in Shmot? Rabbi Shmuel saying it's the land of the damaged party, whereas Rabbi Akiva is going to say, no, it's the land of the damager. And so from there, the Gemara is going to sort of look through these opinions a little bit more carefully. So I'll just read the beginning here of Rabbi Shmuel, right, where Rabbi Shmuel is basically saying that the damager has to pay as if whatever was you know, damaged was the produce of the best land, right? So in other words, the animal, let's say your ox trampled somebody's produce and it was their worst field, you would still have to pay it, according to Rabbi Shmuel, as if it damaged the best field. So the Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rabbi Shmuel, achal shmanea mishalim shemena, right? It's logical if the animal ate a rich bed of vegetables, its owner should pay the value of a rich bed of vegetables. Achal kechusha mishalim shemena. But if the animal ate a poor bed of vegetables, the owner should have to pay a rich bed. So this doesn't really make sense. This is the problem with Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. So it's going to want to give a different interpretation of what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin, Hacha B'mayaskin, right? What are we dealing with? Kagon Shachal Aruga Bein Ha'arugot. We're dealing with a case where an animal ate vegetables in a bed amongst other beds in the garden. And we don't know if the animal ate a good bed of vegetables, like a rich one, or a poor one. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying in that case, we have to assume that what was damaged was the best of the best, and that's what you have to pay. But if we know that the animal ate from not a great patch of vegetables, they would only have to pay the value of that. You wouldn't have to pay from the choices. The Gemara is going to go ahead and it's going to go back and forth and try to explain Rabbi Shmuel. It's going to bring the Gezeirah Shavah and look at Rabbi Akiva a little bit more as well. I'm not going to read all of this, but I think it's just really interesting to see sort of this Braisa. And again, the real art of interpreting Psukim, right? We sort of read often these Psukim and we're just like, okay, that's what the Pasuk says. And then you see like this, you know, Braisa, and this machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, and you like really are like, oh, it's really not clear what that pasuk means. And depending on your interpretation, it's really going to impact the halacha. So I think this braisa is a beautiful example of the importance of halachic exegesis, and that there really can be very different approaches when we read psukim. It's not always clear cut.
Yeah, and I think that the Gemara, we sometimes think, we don't relate to the Gemara as doing that. We sometimes look at the Gemara as jumping too far afield from the verses, and we kind of, I think it's too easy to miss sometimes that they're really doing very close readings, but that interpretation can go in different ways. So here you have exactly that, you know, as an example on your doorstep of how the biblical text is in fact interpreted by the Talmudic text.
Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rinkus Review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbanit Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.